This is Audible.
Podium Audio presents Invasion, Book 1, A Forgotten Vengeance, written by M.R. Forbes, performed by R.C. Bray. One, Isaac. United States Marine Corps Sergeant Isaac Pine lifted his head as the door slid open. He was still for a moment before his years of training kicked in, bringing him almost subconsciously from his chair to his feet, coming to attention. His visitor was an older man. Twin streaks of white raced through the dark hair at his temples, while wrinkles creased various points of his face, and wise, confident eyes regarded Isaac with interest and curiosity. The full array of hardware on the man's chest was impressive, but Isaac had reacted to the 5 stars across his lapels. "Sergeant Pine," the general said, his expression remaining professional. "At ease. Please sit." "Yes, sir." Isaac relaxed his posture, regaining his seat as the door closed. The general walked calmly to the plain steel table where Isaac was seated, taking a position in the chair on the other side. He held a narrow, translucent tablet of polymer in his hand, which he placed in front of him on the table, revealing the first screen of Isaac's military record. Where had he gotten that? "Sir, is this an interrogation?" Isaac asked. The room was bare, save for the table and 2 chairs, though Isaac had no question there was at least 1 camera hidden in the walls with multiple people watching the feeds. It would be stupid for them to trust him alone with the general. They hadn't bound his hands or feet. He could jump over the table and assault the man if that was his desire. It wasn't. He had come here willingly, all the way from Earth. The doctors of Proxima B had saved his life, removing a brain tumor the surgeon claimed would have killed him in weeks if it had gone untreated. An affliction that couldn't be cured back home. Had they saved him to question him? And why here, in a room straight out of a bad movie? Was he the enemy now? That wasn't how this was supposed to work. "I wouldn't call this an interrogation, Sergeant," the general replied. "What would you call it then, sir?" "A friendly introduction." The general stretched his hand toward Isaac. "I'm General Aaron Hyrie of the Centurion Space Force." Isaac stared at the hand. This wasn't protocol, and it wasn't a friendly introduction. Something like that would have been held in the general's office. He would have been invited there, not escorted here under armed guard. "It's okay, Sergeant Pine, you can shake my hand." Hyrie smiled. "You aren't one of mine." Isaac knew a little about the Centurion Space Force. He knew of some of the history. Most of it wasn't all that good. But like it or not, the CSF had grown from the United States Space Force, which itself had stemmed from a combination of the United States Marine Corps and the United States Air Force. Maybe they were on different planets, but they shared the same origins. They also shared the same enemy. An enemy that was more of a threat than ever. "No disrespect intended, sir," Isaac replied. He wasn't about to shake a 4-star general's hand like he was somebody he met at a bar. "Technically, I am one of yours, or you wouldn't have my military record." General Hyrie seemed to appreciate the response, his lips spreading ever so slightly into a smile. "All right, Sergeant, let's get on with this then, shall we?" His eyes dropped to the polymer and Isaac's record. "Sergeant Isaac Pine," he read. "MOS 5815, Special Reaction Team." He glanced up at Isaac again. "Military police." "Yes, sir," Isaac replied. "That was a long time ago." "Not for you." "No, sir." General Hyrie slid his finger across the slender tablet, flipping through the pages and reviewing the data. Isaac winced when the general navigated past a photo of his late wife. He closed his eyes and focused on his breathing to keep himself steady. "High marks all around," Hyrie said, glancing up at him again. "Your marksmanship scores are especially strong." "I was always good with a rifle, sir." He paused while the general looked back at the data. "General Hyrie, can I ask you something?" "Please do, Sergeant. I prefer we keep things as informal as possible. We aren't enemies, after all. Isaac wasn't entirely sure of that. On some level, they were enemies. But that level paled in comparison to the shared threats waiting for them. You didn't need to come in here to read my file, sir. General Hyrie released his full smile. That was a statement, not a question. The meaning is the same, sir, Isaac replied. Hyrie pushed the device aside and leaned forward on the table. He brought his hands together, locking his fingers. His eyes met Isaac's. There was no malice in them, only that same interested curiosity. I want to know more about Sheriff Hayden Duke. Sir? I'm not sure I follow. I've been in command of the Centurion Space Force for nearly 20 years. For 18 of those years, things were calm. The CSF ran like clockwork. So did Proxima. The entire planet was in equilibrium. Stable, quiet. My job was easy, and I went home to my wife and children every night, believing they were safe, that their lives would be peaceful. He paused, his jaw clenching slightly. And then Sheriff Hayden Duke happened. I don't think it's fair to blame Sheriff Duke for any of this, sir, Isaac said. No. Why not? You have my file, sir. Are you familiar with my more recent history? I've been briefed. You spent 236 years in stasis, intentionally placed there by an operative of the enemy to preserve your genetic potential. They forgot about you. The power ran out, and you woke up 2 months ago. That's an interesting way of framing it, sir. In what way? Can I be blunt, General? Please do. You're minimizing the threat. The operative wasn't some spy, and he didn't forget about me. He had his own people waiting there for me to wake up. The only reason I'm here and alive is because of Sheriff Duke. You say he. Do the Relia Ancients have genders? That's not the point, is it, sir? I don't know if they have genitals or not. I never looked. But Shiroth seemed more like a he. Isaac stared at Hyrie. He didn't seem like the kind of man that would waste a question. He was probing. But for what? Hyrie sat in silence, waiting for Isaac to decide where the conversation would go. General, the real point is that the Relia threat has been present since the Trife arrived on Earth over 200 years ago. If you believe things have been peaceful and your family is safe, I would argue that belief is pure ignorance. Hyrie leaned back slightly, an amused smirk sliding across his face. Ignorance. I assure you, Sergeant, I've been anything but ignorant. When Rico brought you here, she promised me you would provide details about Sheriff Duke's activities on Earth. He claims to have had contact with the others. The Axon, Isaac corrected him, using the alien race's true name. Yes, sir. But I think you already know about that. Gillick is one of yours. She's a Centurion officer, yes. Isaac paused a moment, deciding whether to play one of his cards. Better to use it than lose it. That's not what I mean, sir. General Hyrie's eyes shifted, revealing the location of one of the hidden cameras to Isaac. He lowered his voice. Be careful about the illusions you make, Sergeant. Nothing is as simple as it may seem. Yes, sir. Gillick's team was infiltrated by Relia. They used her to advance their own agenda. That's not how she tells it. Isaac fought to control his immediate response. He failed. That's because she's a self-centered idiot. Sheriff Duke saved her life and she didn't even realize. That's enough, Sergeant, Hyrie said, putting up his hand to silence him. We aren't here to speak to Colonel Gillick's actions. Maybe we should be. We aren't. She's my responsibility and she'll be handled as such. Tell me more about the Axon. Sir, Sheriff Duke made a deal with it. He's trying to negotiate an alliance. Against Proxima? General, I think the fact that you even asked that question speaks volumes about Proxima's treatment of Earth. Could you even blame him if he were trying to form an alliance against you? Perhaps not, Hyrie admitted. Relations between Proxima and Earth haven't been as positive as some of us might want. Mistakes have been made. Mistakes, General? You abandoned the people of Earth except for use in your experiments. You live up here in comfort and safety while the people down there suffer. And when someone down there finally tries to do something about it, you refuse to provide more than a minimum level of aid based on a ridiculous, ill-conceived, and outdated zero-contact protocol. I'm not surprised you don't sleep well at night. I may be in command of the CSF, but I don't run the planet, and I don't make the laws. I've done my best to handle Sheriff Duke within the constraints of my position. I'm still not sure if he's a thorn in my side or a spear in my hand. Maybe you shouldn't be thinking of him in terms of how he can help or hurt you, sir. What about how you can help him help Earth? Sheriff Duke isn't seeking an alliance against Proxima. To be honest, General, after what I just experienced, you're the last thing the people of Earth have to worry about. The Trife were only the beginning. There's a new invasion coming. One that will tear up both our worlds if we don't start working together. The Relia? There's a power vacuum, sir. A hole in their web of dominion. You can guess where the center of that hole is. Earth, Hyrie replied. His smile was gone, his face stoic and tight as Isaac's words sank in. General, the Axon are losing ground, Isaac said. Earth is already on the ropes, and you're sitting out here pretending this planet is safe, but it isn't, I promise you that. But there's still a chance to rally, a chance to save everything. But we have to seize the moment. The time for hiding is over. Hyrie stared at Isaac for a long moment. The tension between them was heavy, the pressure mounting. It was obvious to Isaac the general didn't like what he had to say. But they had brought him here because they wanted him to talk, so he was talking. Why did you cure me, sir? He continued. Because you believed in my loyalty to the Corps, and by extension, the Centurion Space Force? Because you believed I would help you? I can help you. Send me back to Earth. Send me with supplies, ships, armor, guns, and ammunition. Send me with the full weight of the CSF at my back, or better yet, come back with me. Lead the fight yourself. The Trife arrived over 200 years ago, Hyrie said. Since then, we've had no contact or interference from any other extraterrestrials. Why are you so convinced you need more aid than we're already providing? You mean besides the fact that the Trife are still in control of the planet? We fought that war a long time ago, Sergeant. We lost. The people on Earth are ready for you to try again. In any case, the hunger is like a hydra, General. Cut off one head and two more grow back. Sheriff Duke neutralized Shirath. Something worse is bound to follow. Hyrie regarded him for a long moment, silent and thoughtful, choosing his words carefully. Isaac understood. Like the general had said, things weren't as simple as they seemed. There were things he couldn't say in here, things he couldn't do. Even so, Hyrie's next statement caught Isaac completely by surprise. I understand, Sergeant. I understand it was a mistake to bring you here. Whatever Sheriff Duke is planning on Earth, it's obvious he intends to sow dissent here on Proxima. He coached you to assist him in that goal, fuel the fear of the people and watch how the planet burns. Payback for his misguided belief that the people who escaped Earth have abandoned it. The truth is hardly what you've presented here. What you've presented are lies and propaganda. The fact remains that Earth is a wasteland created by an accidental alien invasion over 2 centuries ago. The humans who survive there are tribal savages, and every effort we've made to redeem them have ended with the loss of Centurion lives. Isaac stared at Hyrie, stunned by the force of the rebuke. And the general wasn't finished. There are no other aliens out there except the Trife. We've spent over 100 years searching as much of the galaxy as we can reach, and we've found nothing. The Axon and the Relia, the others and the Hunger, they don't exist. They're code words Sheriff Duke and his followers use to manipulate the people. Words you've tried to use with me here, just as I expected you would. I'm not an Earther, Sergeant. I'm not an uneducated savage. You can't sway me with the same lies you use to convince scavengers and criminals to join the sheriff's so-called posse. Isaac opened his mouth to speak, to counter Hyrie's unexpected tirade. He couldn't get a word in edgewise. Earth is over, Sergeant. It was lost a long time ago. Sheriff Hayden Duke is dangerous. Speaking to you, I realize how dangerous he's become. Why did I cure you? Information, observation, and possibly conversion. I want to give you a chance to see the other side of the argument. You're a trained soldier, a valuable asset. We could use someone like you on the ground. Isaac's heart pounded, his mouth suddenly dry. Hyrie glanced over at the camera again. The general was playing games. Should he play along? You're a liar, Isaac said through gritted teeth. The sucker punch left him seething, but he didn't dare show it. I don't know what your game is, but I'm not playing. Sheriff Hayden Duke is a good man. What he's trying to do on Earth is for the good of everyone there, and the hunger is real, General. It's real, and it's coming. No amount of denial will change that. What you call denial, I call reality. General Hyrie tapped a small button on his collar. The door behind him slid open, and a pair of guards entered the room. They were dressed in dark body armor, black helmets hiding their faces. Take the prisoner to the brig, General Hyrie said. Put him in isolation. What? Isaac said. You brought me here as a guest. You saved my life to throw me, and I expected some level of gratitude, Hyrie replied. Not petulant posturing for a second-rate warlord. The general stood as the guards flanked Isaac. If you don't help me deal with Sheriff Duke, my only other option is to remove both him and you from the equation. Take him away. Isaac decided to try to get over the table after all, growling as he stood and lunged at Hyrie. You son of a bitch! Hyrie didn't even flinch as the guards grabbed Isaac's arms, the enhanced strength of their combat armor allowing them to easily hold him. He struggled in their grasp, but there was no way out of their iron grip. They pulled him toward the door. Wait, General Hyrie said as the soldiers reached it. He turned to face Isaac. I'll give you 24 hours to reconsider your decision. Go to hell, Isaac replied. Hyrie didn't speak as the guards dragged Isaac from the room. 2. Hayden. Sheriff Hayden Duke sat astride his horse Zorro at one end of a narrow street in the northern part of what was left of Tijuana, Mexico. Squinting against the sinking sun despite the protection of his wide-brimmed hat, he looked into the distance to where his deputies approached the rear door of an old warehouse. We're in position, Sheriff, Deputy Nick Salino said, his voice clear and crisp through the small silver badge resting on the collar of Hayden's uniform. Pause, Hayden replied. Breach on my mark. Deputy Cortez moved to the door. He was one of Hayden's new recruits, an older man who had eagerly joined up when Hayden and a force of his United Western Territories deputies rode into Tijuana 3 days ago. The great-grandson of a United States Space Force Marine, he'd had his right arm severed at the shoulder to replace it with a mechanical augment, intentionally turning himself into what was essentially a cyborg. Mongrel. That's what they called people like that these days. Some would say intentional dismemberment was insane, and Hayden couldn't quite disagree. But there was something to be said for the powerful prosthetics the United States military had developed in the wake of the Trife invasion. Hayden flexed the fingers of his hands. He would know. Neither of his arms were organic, both lost at different places and times and under different circumstances. He hadn't intentionally done the deed, but the outcome was the same. He didn't regret it. His options had been to save his limbs or save his wife. One was replaceable. The other wasn't. Now, Hayden said. Deputy Cortez threw the palm of his augment into the door, the force of his effort blowing it open and ripping it from its hinges. The door vanished into the darkness of the warehouse as Cortez moved out of the way, allowing a pair of deputies to move in from each side, leading with their rifles. Hayden lifted his pair of sunglasses hanging from a cord around his neck and put them on. He tapped the side of the frame, and the shaded glass immediately filled in with augmented input, giving him access to the same combat network his armored deputies shared. He used his eye muscles to work the interface, shifting his left eye to a view through Deputy Salino's camera feed. His lead deputy was slowly moving into the warehouse with Deputy Kevitz beside him. Both the camera and Salino's helmet filtered out the dim light, creating a clear grayscale view for both watcher and wearer. Visibility was limited by the volume of product inside the warehouse. The place was a mess, filled with pallets of building materials, drywall, rebar, piping, tile. Most of it remained stacked, stored, and forgotten for the last 200 years, still in the same place where it had been abandoned. A few of the pallets had rotted beneath a leak in the roof, collapsing and spilling their contents across the floor. Scavengers had done good work picking items of value out of the surrounding industrial park, and there was little value in the materials here, at least to the common survivor. Salino moved deeper into the building, the deputies getting into formation behind him. They paired up against adjacent stacks of boxes.
Salino, anything?
Hayden asked. He could see through the deputy's feed, but he didn't have the man's other senses to rely on.
It's creepy as hell in here, Sheriff, Salino replied quietly. There's a smell in the air, musty and thick. It's making my spine tingle.
No sign of the target?
Negative.
Head south. I want to see down the aisles.
Pause.
Salino kept walking, reaching the corner of the boxes and swinging around them, leading with his rifle. Most of the rows were identical, only the material on the pallets changed. Stacks of bagged cement mix stretched into the distance. The deputy went past them to the next row, freezing as he came out into the open. The evidence of a small encampment was visible ahead. An old nylon tent rested against the wall. A number of sleeping bags splayed out in front with a small mountain of refuse beside it. Garbage, mostly old food wrappers, was spread around the site, and a rusted old motorcycle still leaned on its kickstand. And bodies. Hayden counted six right away. They were a few steps away from the tent, the cause of death hard to see from the angle and distance, but Hayden didn't have to guess how they had died. The killers were still there. A warning flashed across Hayden's glasses. A sudden outline appeared in the distance, painted in front of the solid brick wall of the warehouse, even though the target was on the inside. Judging by the position, it was crouched on one of the stacks of materials ready to pounce.
Kevitz,
Hayden snapped.
On it, she replied.
She had already seen the target in her visor and was pivoting to defend herself. The enemy leaped down at her, the sound of gunfire reaching Hayden in his place outside the building. The threat vanished from his display.
Target eliminated, Kevitz said, her voice calm.
Hayden switched to her feet. She was looking down at the dead alien. Slender and lithe, it was a meter and a half long and humanoid in shape, with leathery, ink-black skin. It had three long fingers ending in sharp claws and an opposable thumb. While its feet were similar, large and clawed, the big toe was closer to the side of the foot to allow for better gripping. Its head was small, its elongated face possessing beady dark eyes and a mouth filled with sharp teeth. The creature was naked and genderless, its pelvis and chest both flat. A single xenotrife didn't look all that dangerous, and wasn't. Their hollow bones were brittle and weak, and their claws weren't sharp enough to penetrate the Space Marine combat armor the deputies wore. But then they had learned the armor was vulnerable at the joints, especially where the helmet met the body. A claw in any of those places could rip through the spider steel mesh bodysuit beneath the armor and into the flesh of the wearer. And because of that, a trife slick was incredibly dangerous.
Eyes up, Hayden said. Where are the rest of the bastards?
Kevitz began looking around, focusing on the top of the stacks. The other deputies did the same.
We're clean, Sheriff, Deputy Salino said after a quick search. No sign of any more.
There are always more, Hayden replied. Trife didn't travel alone. Not ever. Where the hell were the rest of them hiding?
We did a sweep, Sheriff. We'd see them on the grid if they were in here.
Color me unconvinced. Stay sharp. I don't trust.
The AR on Hayden's sunglasses lit up again, showing a pair of Trife emerging from around the side of a stack of something that had managed to block the networked armor sensors. Deputies Kevitz and Nan were on it in a flash, moving into position and catching the two Trife in a crossfire.
Told you so, Hayden said.
Scouting party, Salino said.
There are probably a few more.
Salino, check out the bodies. I'm on your feet.
You sure you don't want to come in here with us, Sheriff?
Negative. You can't rely on me always being there to back you up. You're doing a fine job, Nick.
Roger that.
Hayden switched his view back to Salino's camera feed. The deputy approached the small campsite, the bodies coming into view. Salino looked down at the closest corpse. A young man, probably still a teen.
Sheriff, are you seeing this?
Hayden's heart started to pound.
Fall back,
he said, fighting to keep his voice calm.
Now, quick and quiet. I'm on my way.
Roger,
Salino replied as Hayden urged Zorro forward at a gallop.
Quick and quiet.
The gunfire coming from inside the warehouse was anything but, and the kid had been nearly torn in half. A normal Trife couldn't cause damage like that, but a queen could do that and worse. What was she doing down there? He could see his deputies in the augmented reality overlay of his glasses. Their green outlines grew larger as they moved closer to him, both from his forward motion and their retreat. A red outline suddenly appeared from the northwest side of the warehouse, followed by another and another. Nearly a dozen Trife appeared in the area within seconds.
Salino, you've got company, Hayden said, charging the building.
Roger, Salino replied. Targets acquired.
The sound of gunfire split the air, muffled inside the warehouse. Hayden approached the building, but things were going from bad to worse in a hurry. The first dozen Trife weren't the end of it. More of the demons were pouring out of the area, multiplying and spreading. They had to be climbing up from a hole in the floor. If a queen was down there, it meant there was a nest in that hole, and if there was a nest in the hole, it meant there was a power source down there too. And the target they had come here to find, a murderer called Halsey, was already dead. At least there was a silver lining. The gunfire intensified as the Trife charged the fleeing deputies, the entire scene playing out in color-coded outlines in front of Hayden's eyes. He could see how the red outlines approached the green ones and vanished. The constant report of gunfire got louder as he closed the distance. The Trife were still coming, his system counting nearly 100 already in the warehouse and more on the way.
Sheriff, help!
Nan cried out. Hayden switched to her feet in time to see Trife jaws descending on the vulnerable neck joint. Nan screamed, and then the Trife was thrown back by a sudden shower of bullets. By the time he pulled her vitals up on his HUD, they were flat.
Son of a bitch.
3. Hayden. Hayden pulled back on the reins, bringing Zorro to a quick stop at the entrance to the warehouse. The deputies were desperately trying to reach the door through the sudden onslaught of Trife. If he didn't do something, they weren't going to make it. According to his HUD, nearly 200 of the demons had appeared in the building, making their way toward the deputies by any means possible. They tried to flank them on the floor, while also leaping from pallet to pallet. A few even clung to the warehouse rafters, hanging upside down to make their way forward. It was nothing Hayden hadn't seen before. He had spent the last 2 years hunting Trife, clearing out nests and trying to regain some of the land they had taken in the name of humankind. He had been successful, too, turning hundreds of kilometers of land into a safe zone the Trife had yet to penetrate. At least he had thought the Trife hadn't gotten in. But the warehouse was 50 kilometers south of San Isco, too close to home to contain a nest of the demons. How had they managed to stay hidden for so long? He pulled his twin revolvers from their holsters as he slid off Zorro and charged through the permanently open door. He immediately turned left toward the sound of the fighting echoing through the building.
"Zolino, cut left," Hayden said, coming around the side of one of the stacks. "I'll cover your egress."
"Roger," Zolino replied.
Hayden could see both Zolino and Cortez on his HUD, just on the other side of a stack of shingles, their outlines running parallel across his lane. The trike followed close behind, hissing as they gave chase. One of them lunged at Zolino as he crossed the intersection. Hayden didn't hesitate, firing a round that caught the trife in the shoulder and knocked it away. It hit the floor and rolled, staying down when another round hit it in the chest. Hayden kept shooting, cutting down 7 trife while emptying the 2 revolvers. He swung back behind cover and quickly reloaded, using speed loaders to drop full cylinders of bullets into the guns. The demons were still coming, closing on the defending deputies. The red outlines on the HUD left Hayden's immediate view a stained blur, the quantity of trife nearly overwhelming the system's ability to reflect their positions. Hayden turned to follow one of the outlines, getting a glimpse of Cortez a few meters away. The recruit was using his augment to full advantage, throwing hard punches that crushed the bones of the delicate aliens, putting them out of the fight. Hayden's attention shifted to the rafters as a pair of trife dropped from overhead, reaching out to slash at Cortez with their claws. Hayden adjusted his aim and fired, rounds cutting through their skulls. Cortez stepped out of the way as they crashed into the floor.
"There's too many," Kevitt said, getting closer to Hayden.
"Pause," Hayden agreed. "We're pulling out. Cortez, let's go."
Cortez started toward Hayden, but then he turned to look down the aisle and froze.
"Mierda," he said, eyes wide with fear.
Hayden's HUD picked up the threat an instant later. Shit was right. The Queen had emerged from the hole and was charging toward them.
"Move!"
Hayden roared. But Cortez stood there, static, terrified.
"Zolino, Kevitz, get the hell out of here,"
Hayden said, charging toward the motionless deputy.
"Sheriff, you can't make it,"
Zolino replied.
"I'll make it, just go. Keep our escape route as clear as you can and radio HQ for backup."
"Roger."
Trife tried to block Hayden's path, leaping at him from the top of the stacks. He shot them as they came, nearly point blank, the rounds tearing through their flesh and blasting them away. His HUD went wild as a pair of demons tried to tackle him from behind. He spun around, coming down in a crouch and shooting the 2 trife. Revolvers empty, he holstered the guns with practiced ease and leaped up to race the Queen to Cortez. It looked like the Queen was going to win.
"Cortez!"
he shouted again, desperate to reach the man first. The deputy finally snapped out of it, maybe because his life was about to end. He leveled his gun at the Queen and fired. Hayden couldn't see her yet, but the screaming hiss told him Cortez had only made her more angry. A moment later, a claw the size of Hayden's head slashed out, catching Cortez in the face, cracking his visor, and turning his head aside so violently Hayden could hear the bones of the man's neck snap. Cortez's body was thrown into a pallet of boxes, the top 3 tumbling off into the next aisle over. The man's body came down on top of the boxes, his head twisted grotesquely to one side. Hayden's momentum carried him toward the Queen as she emerged from around the stack. Screaming almost directly into his face, he stood there staring at a mouthful of long, razor-like teeth. He didn't hesitate, throwing a solid punch toward her face, needing to aim upward to reach it. The Queen was nearly 3 times the size of the other trife, her skin tougher and body more muscular. She took the blow off her cheek, moving with it. Hayden felt the solid contact right before she returned the favor, catching him in the chest with her claws. They dug deep into the hardened plates of the combat armor hidden beneath his shirt, catching on one of the seams and throwing him sideways. He hit a separate group of trife, knocking them over as they softened his fall. They grabbed at him as he pulled himself up, their lesser strength preventing them from piercing his body armor.
"Get out of there, Sheriff,"
Zolino shouted over the comm.
"Bronson's on the way in with the chopper."
"On it,"
Hayden cried out. He wrapped one metal hand around his vulnerable throat, threw the other one up to protect his face, and charged almost blindly toward freedom. He didn't get that far. The queen wasn't about to let him go. Like all Relia, the Trife communicated across an organic system called the Collective, which operated much like a computer network. A Trife queen here could receive signals from another queen on the other side of the world, sharing information about threats and tactics, and helping one another mutate their genetics to better survive those threats. While the Trife in the warehouse were hardly mutated from their original form, the reaction of the queen when she got a better look at him suggested she knew who he was. She also knew how many of her kind he had killed. She screamed and hissed, rushing Hayden. He would have run, but the Trife had closed in around him, cornering him. They didn't attack. Not now. The queen wanted him for herself. But they weren't going to let him escape. He braced himself, getting into a fighting stance. The queen swiped at him, and he ducked below her claws, then sidestepped her tail as it whipped around at his face. She screamed at him, teeth darting toward his neck. He didn't make the same mistake twice, backing away instead of retaliating. Her other claw slashed at him, and he smacked it down.
Salino, ETA,
he asked, the light on his badge still green, still connected.
3 minutes, Sheriff.
In the middle of a fight, 3 minutes was an impossibly long time. Too long to try to stall. The queen stood in front of him, rising to her full 3 meter height. Her mouth opened wide, and she screamed in anger, ropes of yellow saliva stringing between her jagged teeth. She came at him again, claws slashing, tail whipping, mouth angling at him as she launched an all-out assault. The queen's tail smacked Hayden and began wrapping around him. He didn't move. Her left hand sailed through the air to slash him in the side. He still didn't move. Her face dropped toward his, mouth open as if she intended to take his head off with one bite, and he still didn't move. Instead, he threw his right arm up and into the queen's mouth, reaching to the back of her throat. She bit down on it, teeth pressing hard into metal at the same time he squeezed his hand into a closed fist. The motion activated the alien metal that coated his augment. It expanded out into a pair of blades that stretched through the back of the queen's mouth and up into her brain. Momentum carried the queen's head down his arm until her face was only centimeters from Hayden's. Black eyes regarded him with shock, the sudden weight of her dying form pressing down on his arm. He stared back at the queen. He didn't hate her. She was only doing what she had been created to do. He hated the ones who'd made her. The Relia Ancients. The Hunger. They had delivered the Trife to prepare humankind, to subdue them and keep them weak. Hayden refused to be weak. He grabbed the queen's head with his other hand, holding it as he yanked his arm free. There were indents in it where her teeth had come down, but it was otherwise unharmed. He opened his fist. The Axon liquid metal sank back onto his hand, coating it in a grayish-black sheen. The augment was unique, the only one of its kind. He had paid a high price to earn the prosthetic. Too high a price. The death of a friend was always a price he never wanted to pay. The lesser Trife reacted as expected. The loss of their queen confused them, and for the first dozen heartbeats they stood around him in shock. Then that shock turned to fear, and they hissed and began tripping over one another, fighting to get back to their nest and away from him.
Sheriff, my ATCS is telling me the Trife are running,
Salino said.
That's right, Hayden replied. The queen is dead.
The deputy laughed.
You killed the queen? It was her or me. It's nothing to celebrate. We lost two good deputies today.
Pause that, Salino replied, voice dropping as the excitement washed away. Hayden reached up and tapped his badge.
Bronson, do you copy?
I copy, Sheriff,
the chopper pilot replied.
I'm en route to your position for emergency evac, ETA, 2 minutes.
Copy that. Cancel the evac. The threat is neutralized.
Sheriff?
Head back to HQ and pick up some explosives. We've got a nest to burn.
Roger, Sheriff, I'm reversing course now. Updated ETA, 15 minutes.
Pause that. Sheriff out.
Hayden tapped the badge to disconnect before glancing back at the fleeing Trife.
It didn't matter if they were running. If he let them maintain the nest, they would pick a new queen from among the group, form a mate ball, and transfer the genetic material to the chosen one to make it bigger, stronger, and able to reproduce. In other words, the nest had to be destroyed. The real question was, where had it come from? This area had been clear for over a year and was well within the safe zone. Had the Trife actually tunneled in from somewhere else? He tapped his badge again.
Bronson, this is Sheriff Duke.
I copy, Sheriff, Bronson replied.
Bring the Rangers and 3 plasma rifles back with you.
Roger. What are you thinking, Sheriff?
Something about this isn't sitting right. I want to dig a little deeper before we destroy the evidence.
Roger. If you don't mind me saying, Sheriff, when you have a feeling, that usually means bad things are about to happen.
I'm bound to be wrong sometime, Hayden replied. Let's hope today's the day.
4. Caleb. Caleb descended the cracked and worn concrete ramp, following a line of evenly spaced torches deeper into the underground parking garage. The guards at the base of the slope turned to watch him. Not because they were nervous about his presence. Their eyes were affixed to his body. In their perception, he was a female in a worn and tattered dress with a long tear along the back that revealed half of her dirt-smeared backside.
Primitive savages. And you wonder why your kind lost the war.
Caleb glanced back at the guards, who didn't even pretend not to be staring. Their eyes moved to his face, and one of them smiled and winked.
My shift ends in 3 hours. Should I come find you?
Caleb faced forward without responding. Ishek's laughter resonated in his mind.
It isn't funny, Caleb said.
On at least one level it is. You chose to scan the beggar woman.
I scanned her front. I didn't know her clothes were in such bad shape, and I didn't know she wasn't wearing underwear.
You've been back on Earth for 2 months. You've seen what this place has become.
Caleb sighed. It was a sad truth he was still struggling to accept, even though the outcome had always been known. His journey had brought him from Earth to the stars and back again. A journey that had taken over 200 years to reach this point. When he had left, he was United States Space Force Marine Sergeant Caleb Card, leader of the Vultures, the most elite search and rescue team on the planet. Now, he wasn't sure. Fate had brought him back to Earth through an Axon wormhole, and he hadn't come back alone. Ishek was a Relia advocate, a cross between a slug and a worm, currently wrapped around his right bicep and connected to his mind through tendrites extending from the bottom of the alien's body all the way up to Caleb's cervical spine. The connection, the bond, allowed them to read one another's minds in what was supposed to be a symbiotic relationship beneficial to them both.
I don't appreciate being thought of as a worm or a slug.
That's what you look like.
I'm more intelligent.
Debatable.
Caleb felt a sudden pressure in his mind, Ishek's way of trying to pinch him for the statement. He deflected it easily. Time together had only strengthened their bond, changing them both. For the better? He wasn't sure of that either. The Relia weren't friends of humankind. They weren't anyone's friend. They had spread across the galaxy, crossing thousands of light years and conquering any intelligent races they discovered. They subverted these races to their mission, either through enslavement, the adoption of their genetic material, or both. The hunger was dependent on this constant conquest for survival. Their entire evolutionary nature predicated on feeding off the universe's seemingly endless bounty. Ishek was Aurelia, and its bond to Caleb meant he also needed to feed like Aurelia to survive. That meant access to the pheromones emitted by animals during periods of high stress. In other words, fear and pain. In that way, he had become like a mythical vampire with a dark side that compelled him to ugly violence. It was the reason he was in the garage. Ishek was hungry.
I hunger.
Ishek echoed the sentiment. In the beginning, the hunger was like a curse.
He had tried to starve it out, only to find himself first racked with pain and then unable to prevent Ishek from seizing control of his body. The Relia had no qualms about its need to cause stress. It had no morals, no conscience, and when it was that hungry, no control. Ishek had made him do something he didn't want to remember. Something he had pushed so deep into his mind he couldn't recall it now. All that remained was the vague memory that he had done something horrible. Something that had left him no longer able to consider himself a Space Force Marine. Marines were honorable and loyal. They weren't cold-blooded killers. Like him. Caleb reached the first level of the garage. Fires burned and metal trash bins spread across the floor while groups of survivors huddled around them, talking and eating. A pungent odor wafted from a central fire pit where slabs of meat hung on metal hooks over the flames. Trife meat.
I still can't believe you eat them.
I don't eat them, Caleb replied.
But other humans did. Why wouldn't they? The trife were more plentiful than any other living thing on Earth, and the survivors had somehow developed an immunity to the poison they carried in their blood. A tent city spread out beyond the cook fires. Dozens of various-sized tents in various states of decay rested across the garage floor surrounded by garbage. Mongrel dogs meandered among them, searching for trife bones with meat still attached or other morsels from discarded cans and previously packaged foods with an infinite shelf life. People gathered around the tents. A man with an augmented leg stood beside a worn blanket with guns and knives laid out on display, while a pair of thugs in threadbare jeans and stained t-shirts looked them over. Caleb could almost sense them trying to decide if they could pay for any of the weapons, and if they couldn't, if they should try to take them. Their owner seemed to sense the same, because his hand shifted to rest on the handle of a sidearm, and he coughed to caution the thugs. They glanced up at him and walked away. Further back, Caleb caught sight of a second man. He was more finely dressed in a woven cotton shirt and pants, his feet in sandals, and his hair tied back. Freshly bathed women clothed only in old bathing suits or bra and panties lounged on blankets around him, smiling at the men who approached. Caleb watched as a handful of notes exchanged possession, and one of the women stood and joined the man who had paid for her services. The pimp pointed at a nearby tent, and the couple vanished inside.
Paying for reproduction. Primitive savages.
Better to pay than to take.
That's a matter of perspective. Does the man own these women?
Point made. I don't disagree.
I hunger.
Me too. Are there any targets here?
You tell me.
Caleb smirked. Ishek was testing him. He closed his eyes, opening himself up to the connection between himself and Ishek, and from Ishek to the collective. He searched for nearby Relia, practicing the subtle feel of recognizing when another mind was close. He remembered the one time he had searched the collective and discovered the last thing he ever expected. Another human. The connection had lasted a second, maybe two. He had called out, but there was no reply. That was nearly 2 months ago. He'd kept trying for weeks after that, hundreds of times, but he never found her again. Ishek told him he must have gotten mixed up and misread the connection, but Caleb was certain. He had gotten a glimpse of her memories. He knew she was here on Earth, and her name was Natalia. Natalia Duke. He wanted to find her. A part of him needed to find her. But there was something he needed more. First, to feed. Second, to find out what had happened to the colony on Proxima, and if possible, to get a message to them. He had crossed the galaxy with something of great value. Valuable research a lot of people had died to protect. His mind held the secret to saving the planet. But he had nobody to share the secret with.
5. Caleb.
Caleb walked past the men and women gathered around the cook fire, making his way toward the tents in the back.
He could hear the men whisper as he passed, making quiet comments about this strange new woman in their village. He had copied her visage 4 hours earlier after finding her wandering the road leading into the area, hungry and disoriented. Ishek had wanted to feed on her. Caleb refused. She was in bad shape and had likely already been attacked. His real desire was to help her, to find her somewhere safe to rest and something to eat. There was nothing nearby, and he didn't have the time to stay with her. The hunger was real and growing, and he could only deny his symbiote for so long. He had given her a few notes and a blanket. Maybe she was grateful. It was impossible to tell. She had looked him in the eye and offered a slight smile, but it was the best she could do. He helped her to the side of the road, sat her down in the shade of a tree, and continued ahead. The trife wouldn't touch her, not as long as she was unarmed and unthreatening. He couldn't vouch for anyone who traveled the road and happened to see her there. That was life on the forgotten earth. He winced when he felt a hand grab at the holographic projection of the woman's nearly bare buttocks. His head whipped in the direction of the grabber, who offered a nearly toothless smile.
"You like that?" the man asked.
"This one will do."
Caleb wasn't so sure. He had come here looking for other Relia.
"You found none."
He couldn't argue that fact. Then again, some of the Relia were able to hide from the collective. Servants of one of the Relia ancients. He had already killed a few of them. He couldn't see them, but they could see him. And they didn't like him. Probably because he wasn't on their side.
"Maybe I do," he replied to the man.
The others nearby laughed.
"Oh, Rook, I think she likes you," one teased.
"You gonna get some of that, Rook?" another said.
"Do you have a tent?"
Caleb asked. The man kept smiling as he got to his feet.
"We don't need a tent, darling. There's a dark corner right over there."
He pointed to the corner of the garage, an area the survivors were using as a toilet.
"How romantic."
Caleb tightened his lips to keep from reacting to Ishek's comment.
"What do you say, darling?" Rook asked.
"I hunger, Caleb."
"Why not?" Caleb said. "Lead the way."
Rook beamed, reaching for Caleb's hand. Caleb let him take it. They didn't get far. Someone tapped Caleb on the shoulder. He turned his head back to find the pimp standing behind him.
"Don't just give it away, my specimen," he said.
"What?"
Rook said, pausing and getting in front of the pimp.
"Why don't you butt the hell out?"
The pimp smiled calmly as he shoved a knife into Rook's stomach, pulling him close. The man's sudden pain and fear was thick in the air, and while Caleb hadn't caused it, he could still breathe it in.
"Delicious."
Caleb hadn't caught on to the apparent flavor of the pheromones. He only understood that they either did or didn't satiate the hunger. Rook's grip on his hand loosened as he struggled to breathe. The pimp pulled the knife out, letting the man drop to his knees, clutching at his stomach to stem the flow of blood.
"There's nothing you can do," the pimp said, "except die."
Rook gasped, his fear filling the air. Caleb was surprised by the sudden violence, but it was almost exactly what he had planned to do. He looked at the pimp, making eye contact. They searched one another for a moment. He couldn't sense some Relia, but they could sense him. Caleb turned off the projection as his hand dropped to his sidearm, previously hidden by the projection. The people around him gasped and shouted in surprise, a nearly featureless black humanoid suddenly in their midst. The pimp was shocked for a moment, too. Maybe the pimp expected Caleb was host to an advocate, but he hadn't guessed he was wearing a skin.
"Don't kill him."
Ishek's request caught Caleb off guard. He was slow to draw, giving the pimp the time he needed to leap toward him and stab with the knife. It hit the skin in a flare of blue light, the blade deflected by the skin's shields.
"Why not?" Caleb asked.
The pimp took a swing at him. He ducked below it, nearly tripping over someone as they tried to stand and run.
"He might have information."
Ishek was right. Caleb deflected another punch and then rushed the pimp, tackling him. The dirty man tried to struggle until Caleb put a hand to his back, emitting just enough energy to signal the Koran inside him. There was more than just its host's life at stake.
Wait, the pimp said. Don't!
He stopped struggling.
Who do you serve? Caleb asked.
What?
I don't serve any.
Caleb increased the energy output, burning the man's back. He gritted his teeth in pain.
I said, who the hell do you serve?
The pimp growled softly.
Nyarlath, the greatest of the gods.
Caleb nodded. Most of the Koran he had found served the same Relia Ancient. Even the ones who didn't said the same thing. Nyarlath was the most powerful leader of the Hunger. Not the strongest, but the oldest and most intelligent.
Where is she? Caleb asked.
The pimp started laughing.
Not here, but she's coming. Her brother is dead, and soon this world will know true fear.
He kept laughing, even as his hand started rising behind Caleb's back. Caleb didn't hesitate, sending a blast of energy into the Koran before the pimp could drive his knife into him. When the Koran died, the host died, the blade falling out of his hand and clattering on the cement.
We knew that was coming.
Caleb nodded slightly, turning to look at the weapon. It wasn't a knife, after all. It was short and thin, with a violent, serrated edge. It was made of dark alloy. Alien metal. Axon origin. He had never seen anything like it before. Ishek filled in the blanks.
An Axon microspear, originally designed as a torture device for use against my kind. It looks as though it's been weaponized.
How many of you are on this planet that somebody made a weapon to kill you?
Unknown. Enough. He said Nyarlath is coming.
Caleb picked up the microspear, looking up as the guards came running toward him, along with nearly a dozen armed scavengers. He got to his feet, holstering his sidearm. He had nowhere to put the microspear, so he kept it in his hand as he raised them.
I don't want any more trouble, he said.
The guards leveled their shotguns at him. They couldn't hurt him if they wanted to, but there was no more reason to fight. He had gotten what he came for. He had satisfied the hunger. The guards and scavengers stopped in front of him, unsure what to make of him. He knew how alien he looked. The skin covered his entire body, including his head.
Don't shoot, he said. I'm leaving.
He started toward them, moving deliberately while they followed him with their guns. They didn't say anything as they parted to let him through. He could taste their fear. It would keep Ishek satisfied for a while. He kept going, back across the garage to the ramp. The guards followed him, making sure he left, as though they had control over the decision. He emerged back into the open air. The sun was setting. A bad time for most to be outside alone. Not for him. He didn't look back as he resumed heading north on the old highway, considering what the pimp had said. If Nyarlath were on his way, that was a problem. A big problem. But it was a problem he could help solve. He just needed to get what he knew to Proxima. It was more important now than ever. 6. Rico. Rico stood at the window of her apartment, looking down. The activity of evening traffic inside Dome 3 left a field of color and light across the city below, a stream of life, safety, and happiness that stood in stark contrast to the world she had recently left behind. Earth. Her eyes shifted skyward toward the top of the dome. It was nighttime, which meant the atmospheric projectors were turned off and the sky, the real sky, was visible through the thick, transparent shield that protected them from the harsh elements of their home planet. Once, not that long ago, the beauty of the sky and the billions of stars beyond brought her comfort. Now looking at them caused her to shiver.
I'll miss you, Sarge, she said out loud, thinking of her husband.
They had been in the Centurion Space Force together, assigned to Earth. They had spent years loving one another from afar, and when they had finally come together, fate had ripped them apart. Earth had ripped them apart. Austin was gone, killed by a madman who wanted the aliens to win. He had been dead for months now. Rico still felt the loss, every damn day. She sighed heavily, refocusing her thoughts. As the liaison between Earth and Proxima, it was her responsibility to make sure whatever happened down there didn't affect anything that happened up here. Humankind's newer and better world had a tenuous relationship with their origins, and the latest developments had left her wondering where it was all going to lead. As far as the population of Proxima was concerned, as far as the elected government was concerned, Earth was as it had always been. A civilized society of humankind that their ancestors had fled centuries earlier to escape oppression and form their independent society. Rico shook her head. It was such bullshit. But after so many years, the civilians bought it without question. So did the Centurion spacers who didn't know any better, who had never gained the clearance to be deployed there. It was Proxima's best-kept secret, and anyone who even hinted they might try to reveal it was dealt with quickly and violently. She wasn't about to say anything to anyone who didn't already know. Rocking the ship wouldn't help Proxima, and it wouldn't help Earth. No, the only thing that could help them all was to keep the tenuous relationship going and try to navigate the dark water between fiction and reality where the Council, the military, and the Trust, the planet's organized crime syndicate, operated. The job to act as fulcrum had fallen to her when Austin died. She could only hope she was making him proud. Rico turned away from the window, crossing her cube to the small countertop that served as a kitchen. There was no livestock on Proxima. The meats they had were all preserved in petri dishes and grown in vats, processed and packaged to look like the real thing when it never could. Very few people even knew what the real thing looked like. But she did. There were cows and pigs and chickens on Earth, along with all kinds of other wildlife. The trife didn't kill them. They only killed humans. She opened a small drawer and pulled out a package marked as turkey. She tore the wrapper off and threw it into the oven. She wasn't all that hungry, but she figured